Live from New York, it's The Gary Nall Show. And now, your host, Gary Nall.
Got my mojo working, but I just don't worry.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I welcome you. Today, we're going to be empowering people by giving you a deeper insight into the different types of vitamin C and what the new research is showing, how oncologists are now using it as part of an adjunctive therapy because it shows that it enhances chemotherapy. But is it really that it enhances chemotherapy? Because they've never done a study comparing a patient receiving vitamin C by itself at high doses intravenous and chemotherapy by itself. So I believe that if they did that trial, they would see it's not the chemotherapy, it is the vitamin C. In any case, more on vitamin C today. Also, we are seeing our children put at risk, not just from vaccines, but also from the adulteration of our food. And one of the ways we're adulterating our food is with antibiotics fed to livestock, and that's putting our children at risk. I'll give you the latest on this from the American Academy of Pediatrics new report. You haven't heard about it. You'll find it interesting and why. One more reason that if you're a parent, you should be only feeding your children clean, meaning antibiotic-free food, and preferably plant-based. Also today, how our gut bacteria can control our moods. And that's something that people hadn't thought about, but there's a very good piece of research on this, and I'll share that with you, and also how a healthy diet may reduce the risk of ovarian cancer in African-American women. That's from Rutgers Cancer Institute, and how a light turmeric extract combination treats a psoriasis effectively. So we'll deal with that. Also today, in very serious matters involving the world we live in, from Joe Quinn from ScotNet, 10 years on, Iraq lies in ruins as new evidence confirms U.S. government used death squads to manufacture a civil war. Now, we were told that that civil war in Iraq between the Sunni and the Shia was simply centuries of animosity between them. That's not true. You will hear for the first time today information that we, the CIA in the United States and the Defense Department, planned and orchestrated death squads that would kill Sunnis and kill Shia and then blame each other. Also today, five truths you should know about terrorism and Islam from Faisal Khoury from Counterpunch. Also today, a very interesting piece from John Pilger from Counterpunch on what we should know about the history of violence. Now, I'm also going to talk about lobbyists from New Information in California who are behind the introduction of the SB 277 vaccine bill that passed. We suspected as much. Now we have hard evidence because they've actually gotten a copy of a memo showing that all these vaccine makers and state health authorities were working together to promote this. And for those of you who said, well, there's no truth to wanting to control population size in Africa, then maybe you can explain some new information that has just come forward that the Kenyan Catholic Doctors Association had six tetanus vaccinations from around Kenya tested, different ones, all 100% of them tested positive for the HCG antigen. What that means is that Kenyan doctors are finding anti-fertility agent put in a UN tetanus vaccine. How does that happen? It's not in other vaccines. Do they figure that, well, let's start with reducing the population in Kenya? Who gave them the right? If you're going to do that, why not reduce the population in Silicon Valley, of billionaires having babies? Why not do that? Why not insist that every person working on Wall Street or every person working for a government contractor in Washington receive the same vaccine? why not sterilize them? Wouldn't it be a great idea if we were able to have every politician and lawyer in America sterilized? No, it wouldn't be a great idea. It'd be a terrible idea. We have no right to determine who is a worthy occupant of the space called Earth. That's just hubris and arrogance. All life is sacred. And therefore, who was behind this? I'll give you that. Time permitting today, the hidden villain of global warming. From Gar Smith from Common Dreams, the Pentagon, and debt serfdom in America from El Ali Khan. So we have a lot to share. I'm not sure we'll get through all of it. If we don't, then we always have tomorrow. Plus, we also have a little debate, an audio clip that I'll share with you about this. Let's begin. As you know, I'm a great advocate of vitamin C, and it's not just because I take it myself. I do. But also, very quietly, I was taking as much as 200,000 milligrams a day, 6 days a week, having my blood every single week to see what would vitamin C at a very high dose do to a very healthy person, myself, who's never smoked or drank or done drugs, medications, and a vegan and an athlete, and what would it do? And it was only by determining what it would do for me that I then created protocols to be used by the physicians at the Tri-State Healing Center that helped save thousands of lives. It's just it's a historical fact. I've written articles on vitamin C. I've done studies on vitamin C, and vitamin C is just, it's the single most important nutrient of all the nutrients you could ever take. Now, there are other nutrients that will do something more than vitamin C could do specifically as a single nutrient, like a vitamin E or coenzyme Q10, but there's nothing that helps the body overall as much as vitamin C, and I believe we should be taking it about six times a day in a form that is able to be compatible with our digestive system. There's some new information from Paul Fassa from Health Impact News talking about its therapeutic benefits, and I think this is important. I'm going to quote some of this, where he says here, the terms ascorbate and ascorbic acid are often used alternatively. And he wants to clarify, quote, vitamin C comes in many forms. The most common form is ascorbic acid, which is hydrogen ascorbate. Vitamin C does not have to be acidic. It is also found in various alkaline forms. Now, here's what's important, because this is what I use, and this is what I recommend other people use. And they do. I know a whole lot of people in this audience use this form. Quote, alkaline forms of mineral ascorbate, sodium ascorbate, calcium ascorbate, magnesium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate. Now, these are all ascorbates. And it is really the ascorbate portion of each molecule that has vitamin C activity. Chemists refer to vitamin C as the ascorbate ion. But the ascorbate fraction rapidly attaches to some other ion like hydrogen, sodium, calcium, magnesium, potassium, etc. Usually vitamin C is referred to as the most common form. Ascorbic acid, the fact that all the ascorbates listed are the active component of vitamin C is intended to help understand that these compounds are needed for intensively delivering vitamin C that is therapeutic. Other food sources of vitamin C cannot deliver potency needed for effectively treating diseases ranging from cancer to the flu and even preventing heart disease. Now, what does this mean? What this means is this. You buy a cheap form of vitamin C. You can get them very cheap in drugstores and box stores. You're getting straight ascorbic acid. But what about the ascorbates? And how were they made? And where were they made? And all this is important. And how much is going to actually be absorbed by the tissues? Now, the most powerful way of getting it is getting into ascorbate form. You can also take more of it. In fact, I was challenged once in a lecture I was giving by someone who may have been an antagonist, may have been a plant provocateur, just may have been a curious person asking a question. And the person said, well, I only can take so much vitamin C and then I start getting diarrhea. And I said, well, that may be true, but you have to ask yourself, are you taking it with a meal? Are you taking it in a smoothie? Are you taking it in a protein shake? How you take it will make a determination. And what I heard you say on the show, you don't do that. And I said, I don't. And he said, well, I find that hard to believe. So what I did was, it so happens that I had a bottle of vitamin C. And so every 20 minutes, I took another teaspoon, which was 2,400 milligrams of vitamin C. And I just kept lecturing. And I said, well, if you're right, you're going to see it because I'm not going to be up here lecturing. But I went through the whole 2.5 to 3 hour lecture, no problem. I took an awful lot of vitamin C. So there are several things to consider. First, your body will use more vitamin C if you are under attack, if you have cancer, heart disease, diabetes, if you have inflammation, if you have viral infection, bacterial, parasitic infection, if you're recovering from injury. All that necessitates more vitamin C. If you're very healthy, you can use less vitamin C, but even the healthiest people I know will still need about 2 to 5,000 milligrams that I believe is the ideal level if you're really healthy. Now, many people have candida. Many people have a failed immune systems, which case then you might go up to 20,000 milligrams a day. Vitamin C at 20,000 milligrams a day is what Linus Pauling took every day for over 30 years. But if you want a therapeutic dose intravenous, you're going to start at 25 to 50,000 milligrams and then go up in 25,000 milligram increments. And that's how the people with AIDS, and that's how the people with cancers were able to not only improve the quality of their life or live longer lives or have their complete remission and reversal of their disease. I had 12 out of 12 people. There's actually 1,200 people, but of the 1,200 people who were being treated for AIDS-defining illnesses at the Tri-State Healing Center over the years, I asked, how many of you would like to be on an advanced protocol? It would require 4 hours a day, 6 days a week. And it was free, and to them, not to me. I had to pay for it. But of those individuals, 12 out of 12 completely reversed their AIDS-defining illness, meaning they were HIV negative. They had no opportunistic infections. Their T cells were normal. They were vitally healthy at the end of that. And I believe it was Arthur Ashe, who had been there a lot, talked with someone from Tony Brown's Journal on PBS, and they came over, and then they spent time there. They looked at medical records. And over a period of 2 years, they invited 8 of those 12 people on the air with myself. And then we had a press conference. We had 100 people who had improved, were long-term survivors with no illnesses. And they were vitally healthy. Not all had seroconverted. But these were not just my protocols. These were multiple protocols. And their doctors were there. The esteemed group of scientists were there. And not a single member of the media showed up. So the next time someone says, oh, we'll do anything to help people with AIDS, and, you know, no, they won't. Not if it challenges natural, non-toxic therapies that are inexpensive, challenge their very toxic patented drug therapies. Now, I don't ever tell people not to take their drugs, but they try to talk people out of taking the natural approach, which is unethical, immoral, and it's just stupid. But be that as it may, vitamin C was a very important part of it. It wouldn't have happened without it. And these people were up at very high doses. But there they were on national television. There they were, you know, at a press conference. Anyone could challenge them, but no one did. Why? Because if you open a debate, national debate, and I'm allowed to bring on people and scientists and doctors and studies that show that the approach that's natural is giving people back their life and their health, that's a whole lot different than promising people that you're going to give them drugs that may or may not allow them to live a longer life, may or may not have very serious side effects, including death, and that were absolutely the primary cause of death for almost 10 years with AZT. Let me put it this way. Any doctor in the world using AZT today at the same potency 4 times a day that was used at the height of the AIDS epidemic would be disbarred from practicing medicine, would be sued. So, do we have any of those doctors apologizing? The AIDS front groups that got millions of dollars apologizing? The AIDS activists that got millions of dollars or got preferential treatment or got put on presidential panels or got invited to all-expense-paid junkets by the pharmaceutical companies, AIDS conference, did they apologize? Have we heard any of these people apologize? No, we have not. That's unfortunate. But also, they don't dare engage in that debate. But, to be fair, there always might be someone willing to come forward to offer why the orthodox approach is the best approach. And I give you that opportunity to come on this program, just you and I, and I will debate you on this, and you'll be treated with the respect we treat everyone with. And lay out your premises, lay out your arguments, and I'll lay out mine, and then I'll deconstruct yours, as you'll have an opportunity to deconstruct mine. And we have a lot of long-term survivors. How many do you have? I'd like to interview them. I'd like to see their medical records. We have ours. And that also is a message for Charlie Sheen. I know his brother listens to, or has listened to, my program when I was on KPFK, because Roy of Hollywood talked with him and got a contribution from him. So if anyone knows Charlie Sheen, let him know that I'm not a friend of Charlie Sheen. I do not approve of his lifestyle or his behavior or his attitude. In fact, there's not a whole lot about him that I care about. But I'm not here to reproach him. I'm not here to chastise him. That is not my responsibility. But I am here to let him know that if he has the discipline to undergo a rigorous alternative protocol, there's a chance he could live a long and healthy life, even reversing his HIV diagnosis. That is up to him. If anybody can reach out to Charlie, if his brother will listen to this, and I'll send a copy of today's program to Roy to play overnight on KPFK, so he might be able to hear it there. So, but it can happen, Charlie, with your normal pungent attitude towards life and people and your disdain for anything of discipline. The people that I work with, I only work with those people who commit 100%. And that would mean you would literally have to remove yourself from society for about a year and follow a protocol that would have you busy 10 hours a day. So, on one side is the opportunity to have the same results as others have had, or you face what's in front of you using orthodoxy. Anyone who wants to reach us to put this information into Charlie's hands can call our office at 646-926-5422. Now, here's some really good information from Science magazine on vitamin C at mega doses used intravenously, and especially as an adjunct for cancer treatments with normal treatment resistance due to KRAS and BRAF gene mutations. Half or more colorectal, lung, and ovarian cancer cells contain those mutated genes that manage to repel chemotherapy attempts at targeting them. And the laboratory and animal studies convinced researchers that there is potential for at least applying megadose vitamin C therapy with conventional chemotherapy that to lead the charge at disabling those genes. And this was a mainstream, mind you, we're not talking about alternative treatment, a mainstream medical endeavor. And some of the oncologists lauded this study and feel compelled to start using mega vitamin C dose therapies on cancer patients with conventional oncology standard of care chemotherapy. That's a good place to start, but at some point you may want to try the following, because I know we have a lot of oncologists listening. And I certainly thank you for listening, but try this. In fact, to the oncologist who met me the other day while I was having a juice, I didn't know him. He came up, introduced himself, board-certified oncologist in the Upper West Side. Start by adding in vitamin C, and I'll give you a protocol of what goes with it. And then over a period of months, reduce the amount of chemotherapy, but increase the amount of vitamin C till the person finally is having no chemotherapy and only vitamin C. And see then with one patient using only chemotherapy, one patient using chemotherapy and vitamin C intravenous together, and then see what would happen when you wean off chemotherapy and you increase vitamin C and other modalities. It may change your entire perspective on cancer and treatment. And we have the studies, we have the patients, we have the background to support anything I just said. Next up, we have some good information about antibiotics. It's good information because it's not generally known. This is something I'm sure you haven't heard. It is from Dr. Jerome Paulson, MD, and he has published this in the American Academy of Pediatrics, warning doctors the ability to treat life-threatening infections in children is being compromised by the practice of adding antibiotics and other antimicrobial drugs to the feed of animal livestock. Quote, children can be exposed to multiple drug-resistant bacteria, which are extremely difficult to treat if they cause an infection through contact with animals given antibiotics and through consuming the meat of those animals. And that's the lead author of the report. Now, why is that important? Because 80% of antibiotic use in the United States is in livestock. And many of the drugs are given to the animals for non-therapeutic use, meaning it just allows them to grow fatter quicker. But residues stay in the body. Quote, antibiotic resistance is becoming a bigger and bigger problem, both in kids and adults, so much so that some infections are becoming difficult, if not impossible, to treat. That's according to a Dr. David Halsom, a pediatric infectious disease specialist and director of the Antimicrobial Stewardship Program at Cincinnati Children's Hospital. So here's two suggestions. First, only feed your child organic, wholesome foods. Secondly, if your child has experienced antibiotic use and has an infection, there are 2 million infections every year in the United States from antibiotic resistance bacteria, and these kill 23,000 Americans each year from antibiotic resistant infections. So we're not talking about something that's insignificant. If you're one of the persons, if you're one of the 2 million people with that infection, it's very significant, which is one of the reasons that we should put alcohol and hydrogen peroxide surfaces area that helps prevent contact with MRSA in some of these, but also by rebuilding the body's natural immune system. Now, I don't have time today, but on an upcoming program, I will do an in-depth discussion of rebuilding your immune system so that you're less likely to have that. But you know, when you have a flame on this heating the body up, you're getting infections, turn off the flame. Don't just treat the symptoms of the local inflammation, inflamed areas. Turn off the flame. Stop eating antibiotics in dairy, antibiotics in beef or chicken or pork. If you are going to eat animal flesh, at least eat that which is grass-fed and labeled as organic. Mind you, it is still not humane. And it's still environmentally polluting. But some people will transition in life when they choose to. My job is to be there to help people in their transitions to where they are on, ultimately, the healthiest diet, which is a plant-based, organic, locally grown diet. But until we get there, let's save our kids, get them off the antibiotics, and most of the time they're being treated for something that doesn't work in anyhow with antibiotics. And finally, how your gut bacteria can control your mood and behavior and food choices. This is a good piece in Natural Health, a good publication. It was published in the peer-reviewed journal Bioessays. Here's what it says, that if you've ever had junk food derail your best intentions of eating healthy foods, you have probably blamed weakened willpower. But the real culprit, fueling those cookie and chip cravings, may have nothing to do with your brain. Instead, it could be your gut flora, those tiny microbes living in your intestinal tract, sending you strong signals to devour sweets, salty snacks, or other less than desired foods. As crazy it may seem, the ecosystem of microbes thriving in your intestine system is adept at promoting feelings of hunger, sparking dietary choices that match their own needs at the expense of competing bacteria. The microbes in your intestine are abundant, with scientists estimating the average person has between 15,000 to 30,000 different species of gut bacteria and fungi and other gut microbes. All that diversity leaves each microbial species with its own favorite food sources, in large part taking clues from available food sources over time. A published article in BioEssays points out that the power that bacteria can have over their host, and in the case of intestinal bacteria, far outnumbering human genes 100 to 1. At the same time, the bacteria species are varied, competing for nutrients domination. And just with other living species, your gut bacteria has its own strong drive for survival. This often includes sending signals to the host demanding continued consumption of processed, unhealthy food that allowed it to become overgrown in the first place. The result is a sort of power struggle initiated in your gut. So, what do you do to break that cycle? Give good natural probiotics. Probiotics that are healthy. Nourish good bacteria and starve the bad. Get rid of sugar. For example, onions, garlic, Jerusalem artichokes and leeks, bananas and blueberries are all known to aid in restoring healthy gut bacteria. Squelch worry and anxiety, because stress always leads you to eating bad food, because it also promotes microorganisms that are bad. And select healthy water. And stay away from fluoride, chlorine, and avoid pesticides and antibiotics. Those are some things that can help. I'm Gary Nall. I don't have more time today for health nutrition. I'll get to the other issues tomorrow. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you from all over the world and all the other sister stations that are carrying this program. Thank you very much. We have tiny little stations up in Woodstock listening, a great group of very progressive individuals up there, and it's always a pleasure when I go up there to meet them, present a film, do a lecture. Look forward to that. Down in Florida and West Virginia, all across America. Why? Because people want to be empowered. We hear so much bad news. It's important that we put it in perspective. How's that balanced with solutions? Don't tell me a problem if you can't tell me a solution to that problem. That's what we're about. You've heard our problems and solutions with health today, from helping Charlie Sheen if he chooses to go the way I would go. I'm not going to judge whether he will make that choice, but based upon his previous lifestyle, he has a lot to overcome. He's got to take a spiritual path in life. He's taken, you know, the path he's taken, and look which led him. Remember, there's a concept here that you will only know the quality and rightness of your choices when you reach your destinations in life. If we wake up one day and one of our destinations is divorce, another is a heart attack, something else is bankruptcy, something else is voting for Republicans, Democrats, which is like having cancer or heart disease, then you know you've been doing something wrong. Do you have the courage to turn around, relive your life in reverse, and see what major choices have I made that have misaligned me with what I actually need to be an important part of society, giving to others, sharing, caring about others, and doing so without greed and insecurity is what motivates you. That's what we're about. That said, in a moment, we're going to talk about the hidden villain of global warming, the Pentagon. We're also going to talk about, I'm going to share this first up, about lobbyists. Why? Because we help lead the campaign to educate the consumers of vaccines in California that what you were consuming was not safe or effective. By the way, before the end of the week, Richard Gale and I will have our newest article on the truth about vaccines and autism. It will be the most definitive scholarly article, fully referenced, and all of you who are questioning, is there a connection? I'm told by Paul Offit there's no connection. I'm told by the CDC there's no connection. We'll show you the truth. There are connections. And you can use this article. You can use it, share it with people. And I'm happy people are going to share articles and videos because it empowers people. Here's the latest, and this is from VacTruth. Jeffrey, John out there, quote, on June 30th, after the passage of California Senate State Bill SB 277, State Senator Richard Pan publicly thanked grassroots group Vaccinate California and the California PTA for their efforts to eliminate the personal choice vaccine exemption for parents. Several unnamed groups also were heavily involved behind the scenes. A marketing campaign entitled I Heart Immunity was created after the Disney measles outbreak and used as a vehicle to persuade public opinion to support Pam's bill. Analysts showed lobbyists were connected to Senator Richard Pan and the California Medical Association. These key relationships assisted in the passing of SB 277. So on the surface, it appears that a group of passionate parents spontaneously rallied together to support the passage of the bill. Not true. Analysts revealed groups and individuals who are well connected to pharmaceutical companies assisted in an opportunistic marketing campaign which promoted the passage of the bill. Here's who they are. Here's what we now have that you have not seen. Quote, this is from the California Medical Association, and shame on them for doing this, but they have no shame. Quote, the California Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, California's AAPCA, California Immunization Coalition, Vaccinate California, and Health Official Officers Association of California have joined forces to launch the I Heart Immunity campaign in an ongoing effort to promote the importance of vaccines and Senate Bill 277, the Pam Allen, end quote. So there you have it. So many of the people who ask us, well, what exactly is behind this? We have the majority of the people, California, want to have the option of vaccinating or not. Well, you were up against a big political lobby, and the pharmaceutical industry was behind all of it. So those are the people now that you should remember and not support because they sold you out. It's that simple. Now, also, I want to tell you from our environmental segment, this is from Gar Smith of Common Dreams. Quote, during the November 15th Democratic presidential debate, Bernie Sanders sounded an alarm that climate change is directly related to the growth of terrorism. Citing a CIA study, Sanders warned that countries around the world are, quote, going to be struggling over limited amounts of water, limited amounts of land to grow their crops, and you're going to see all kinds of international conflict. On November 8th, the World Bank predicted that climate change is on track to drive 100 million people into poverty. In March, the National Geographic study linking climate change to the conflict in Syria, quote, a severe drought in Syria, worsened by a warming climate, drove Syrian farmers to abandon their crops and flock to cities, helping trigger a civil war that has killed hundreds of thousands of people, end quote. Now, the sobering insight that climate change can accelerate violence should weigh heavily on the minds of delegates to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change coming up in Paris, a city that on November 13th suffered grievously from the blowback of the Syrian conflict. But there's another looming threat that needs to be addressed. Put simply, war and militarism also fuel climate change. From November 30th to December 11th, delegates from more than 190 nations will convene in Paris to address the increasingly visible threats of climate disruption. Now, but it's difficult to imagine the delegates reaching this goal when one of the largest contributors to global warming has no intention of agreeing to reduce its pollution. The problem in this case is neither China nor the United States. Instead, the culprit is the Pentagon. The Pentagon occupies 6,000 bases in the United States, 1,000 bases, the exact number is disputed, in 60-plus foreign countries, and according to the base structure report of the Pentagon, the Pentagon's global empire includes more than 539,000 different facilities at 5,000 sites covering 28 million acres. The Pentagon has admitted to burning 350,000 barrels a day of oil, and only 35 countries in the world consume more, but that doesn't include oil burned by contractors and weapons suppliers. It does, however, include providing fuel for more than 20,000 armed vehicles, thousands of helicopters, hundreds of jet fighters and bombers, and vast fleets of Navy vessels. The Air Force accounts for half of the Pentagon's operational energy consumption, followed by the Navy at 33%, the Army at 15%, and an oil accounted for 80% of the Pentagon's energy consumption, followed by electricity, natural gas, and coal. Ironically, most of the Pentagon's oil is consumed in operations directed at protecting America's assets and access to foreign oil and maritime shipping lanes. In short, the consumption of oil relies on consuming more oil. This is not a substantial sustainable energy model. The amount of oil burned and the burden of smoke released increases whenever the Pentagon goes to war. And Oil Change International estimates the Pentagon's $2 trillion Iraqi war generated more than 3 million metric tons of CO2 pollution per month. Despite being the planet's single greatest institutional consumer of fossil fuels, the Pentagon has been granted a unique exemption from reducing or even reporting its pollution. So, the largest polluter in the world, the Pentagon. The one who's not going to be at any meetings to reduce its polluting, the Pentagon. The one who gives the world the finger, the Pentagon. So why don't we put some energy towards that to see if we couldn't put a limit to that? Of course, if we recommended any restrictions on the Pentagon, the entire right would begin frothing at the mouth and feigning like goats all over the United States. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to go in studio in a moment, but we have Luann Panessi online right now. Hi, Luann. She's not there. Okay. Luann was going to mention the fact that coming up in January, we have something really remarkable and fun planned. We have a one-week retreat for those who want to start the new year by changing their perceptions, their perspective, their health. If you are a person that is concerned about your health, if you're overweight, if you're diabetic, if you have fatigue, pain, if you're depressed or confused or anxious, if you want to just live a healthier, longer, happier life, then you should pay attention to this retreat because it's all about detoxification, rebuilding and rejuvenating, de-stressing, and it's gourmet vegan meals, it's wonderful classes, it's free counseling on your own personal needs in private. It is discussions every night that I do. It's power walking, biking, swimming, exercising in the gym. It's meditation and yoga. It is real deep cleansing, juices all day long, fresh organic wheatgrass. It's classes on hydroponics and sustainability. The things that progressive people need in their lives to go forward, you're going to be given. The questions you need answered will be answered. And it's a limited number of people. And that's it. Give a call, and I'm going to give you Luann's number in a moment that you can call Luann, and we're going to get her number. And you'll call her because you got to convince her that you should be there. She has a selection process of if you're a negative, toxic, angry, spiteful, hateful person, forget it. Forget it. You ain't coming. We had a couple of those last time. Luann's online. How did you let those angry, negative, toxic people buy your inspection, Luann?
They fooled me. They tricked me, Gary. That's all I can say.
Okay, they won't do that again.
No, they won't.
Who do we want? Who should come to this week?
Gary, we're looking for people that are excited about the changes that are happening around them, even though it could be scary. These are people, the people that are talking to me now, and we've had a lot of people call. They're interested in creating a sustainable life. They are happy people that are excited about learning about how to keep themselves optimally healthy and maintain their happiness how to have healthy relationships, how to manage your time better, how to keep yourself physically fit. These are the people that are curious about this stuff, and they're very excited about coming to a pristine, bucolic, gorgeous climate with warm weather in January. Those are the people that we're looking for to come.
Good. People with the right attitude can always get right results. Give your number for people who'd like to join us.
Surely. It's 631-504-6198. That's 631-504-6198. I'm here all day. I'll be happy to take your calls. If you get the answering machine, just leave your name and number, and I'll call you right back.
And we have a wonderful staff. In fact, we always have more staff than what we can actually facilitate. So some of the people who've wanted to come and haven't had a chance, we're giving them a chance. So you're going to meet some new people. You'll have our great chefs. You'll from the last retreat, you're going to see them. Gourmet vegan meals. Everything is vegan and wheat-free. So we look forward to it. Give your number one more time.
Surely, 631-504-6198. 631-504-6198.
Great way to start the new year. Thank you, Luann. Now, just two program announcements. Well, I'm going to be filming upstate for a new documentary that I can't discuss with you. It's an extremely powerful documentary. It's the most complex documentary we've ever filmed. And we're going to do a shoot in Ithaca this Friday. And we're looking for a driver to help get all of our stuff up, our camera people, and go up. You'd be able to sit there. I'm doing all the interviews, and then, of course, we'd have food and juices for you, and then drive back. It's going to be a long day, so you have to have good stamina. We'd be arriving around 11:30, and we'd probably leave around 7, so you got to factor a whole day. So if you can be that driver, and we'll pay for your gas and tolls, of course, give a call, 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422. And finally, I want to introduce to you a brand new product. By the way, I have a brand new product at the store. It's an organic, raw group of nuts and seeds I put together as a nut butter. And then I did the same thing with a whole bunch of fruits as a natural jam. People love them. And if you go by the store, ask for samples, because we got them out on the counter, of Gary's raw sprouted nut seed and jams. That's new. But here's something I've been working on for a long time. I have, by the way, three new products over the next 3 months you're going to be hearing about. One is going to be the most astounding product I've ever invented in my life. It's going through kosher certification now, and it's all organic, and it's, I won't say more than that. It's just that it's completely different than anything I've ever invented. You're going to love it. But here's something that fits the bill for a lot of people. It's a brand new product. It's a nut and stuff. Nut and stuff. What is it? It's low calorie. It is terrific fiber. It's got great protein. But it's absolutely dynamic in all of the essential phytonutrients and essential fatty acids in it. Almonds, white chia seeds, pumpkin seeds, flax seeds, hazelnuts, banana, oatmeal, coconut, and peanuts. These are organic peanuts. And vanilla, and it has the most wonderful vanilla nut flavor. It is a powder, because a lot of people can't eat nuts. And I started this a year ago when a gentleman came up to me and said, I love the nuts, but I can't eat them, and I can't eat the nut butters. They're a little too hard for me. Why don't you invent one of, something that I can eat? It just clicked to me, because I always look for, I invent things to solve problems. So this way you get all the benefits of the nuts, but you got low calorie, you got high nutrient value, you got great fiber, protein, and all the essential fatty acids of the nuts. Almonds? So when would a person normally eat almonds and white chia seeds and pumpkin seeds and flax seeds and hazelnuts and banana and the oatmeal and the coconut and the peanuts? Well, it's all in one now. So that's another stuff. that can help you. And it's normally $79.95, and now today, for this audience, it's $55.99. Great special to get you introduced to it. Call 877-627-5065. Again, Nut and Stuff, or just call it Nut Stuff. 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065. And you can have it. And if you're around the health food store at 89th and Broadway, we always have now samples for you to drink there. And you'll say, wow, this is good stuff. You bet. Nut and Stuff, brand new, my newest invention. 877-627-5065. It's only $55.99. Joining me in studio, we have two gentlemen. One is Vern, and V-E-R-N-E. Vern has a remarkable background, and it's our pleasure to have him on board. He is a documentary filmmaker. He is a lifestyle coach. He has a background in nutrition sciences, and he's helped a lot of people. He's also the author of a couple of really important books on macrobiotics and health, and he's an example of what he talks about. It's always nice to be able to bring someone on board who lives the life. And he is brought on board to help people in their journey to becoming healthier. Hi, Vern.
Hi, thanks. Nice to be here.
Vern, what are the ways that you help people?
I help people learn about their own sensitivity. I help people create a basic program for their health so that they can become sensitive enough to know what will work for them. And by helping them understand why we have certain cravings. Because, you know, it's really easy to say what we should eat, but very often we have cravings for foods that are not supportive, not health supportive. By understanding how we engineer these cravings for foods that are not healthy, it makes it much easier to avoid them. For instance, if you wait long periods between your meals, just one example, your blood sugar will drop and you'll end up wanting sweets. And you'll think it's a willpower issue when, in fact, it's really because you don't understand how to maintain good blood sugar.
You also show people how to make healthy selections instead of unhealthy selections.
Yes, sir.
Good. So people who are overweight, people who are depressed, people who may have high blood pressure and other conditions that are based upon faulty lifestyle and stress management, you're able to guide those people in the choices they make.
Absolutely.
Good. Well, Vern is paid a very nice salary, so he can help you for free. And it's one of the ways I can help people that I can't personally help. I only help people one-on-one who have a letter from their doctor that they're terminally ill, and the doctor has nothing more he can do to help the person. And those are the people I work with. Vern and Celestina and Larry work with people with all the other conditions. And we waited a year interviewing people to hire someone who was really good, and he is very good. Call if you want to have him work with you. Call 212-874-4000. 212-874-4000. His name is Vern, V-E-R-N-E. Thank you, Vern.
Thank you.
For those of you who just joined us, you're probably confused, as many people are, about what's going on in the Middle East. Why would the people who run one country, like Saudi Arabia, be against the people who run Iran or Syria? And people do not understand there's a difference between a Persian and an Arab. They don't understand there's a difference between the Shia and the Sunni. They don't understand where these conflicts began. And are there times when they lived together? Are there times when they've cooperated? Are there times when there was peace amongst them? Were they intermarried? And today, we need to focus a little on that. I've invited our scholar-in-residence, Richard Gale, in to help make sense of this. Nice to have you with us, Richard.
Hi, Gary. How are you? Just to repeat, as you said, we see even now the demonizing of Iran that's been going on ever since the Ayatollah Khomeini started the Green Revolution in the end of the 1970s. We've lived with these kind of a myths of somehow Iran and the Shias should be singled out. Conventionally, throughout U.S. foreign diplomacy, we have not supported any Shia government. But on the other hand, there is only Iran as a Shia government. In other countries where Shias are a majority. It is they are ruled over by a Sunni minority. And in most Arab countries, Shias are persecuted. If you were, particularly in Saudi Arabia, Pakistan. Just to put a few things into perspective, so people have an appreciation and understanding that Persian society, Persian culture, Persian language is vastly different than Arab. The languages are not related to the same root languages. Persian, of course, is connected with Sanskrit, Greek, Latin, all the European languages that we speak, whereas Arabic is Semitic. So when we speak about, when people speak about being anti-Semitic, it's not just being targeted against Jews and people who are speaking Hebrew, but it is also referring to Arabs as well. One of the things since I'm very familiar with Persian culture, having and lived in Shia communities in Kashmir, India, and all my time in India and spending and working in Muslim slums in New Delhi, I can say that there's a greater tolerance, in fact, amongst the Shia that you will not find amongst your typical, the average Sunni. I've experienced this over and over again, even having been adopted into a Shia family in Kashmir. There is emphasis on poetry. Some of the greatest poets in the world, Rumi, Hafiz, Shabastari, Sadi, and Rumi's one of them is one of the best New York Times bestsellers for years. These were all Persian, and people don't even realize what a great scholar Ayatollah Khomeini was on Persian poetry. Classical music, most of your Indian classical music that you listen to, Ravi Shankar, you know, Ustad Vilayat Khan, and many of these other famous musicians, thoroughly influenced by Persian culture. The sitar was invented by Shia Sufi Persian. When we look at, it's very difficult to place, look at Iran as being a terrorist country. Iran has not invaded any country in over 250-300 years. The only time it has ever even called for a jihad was when the U.S. supported Saddam Hussein for Iraq to invade Iran. It came out of that was the mythology because the U.S. was an oppressor in that war, that therefore, by their own rules and their own understanding of jihad, Iran had to include a jihad against the U.S. as well. For Iran, jihad is an internal struggle. It's the internal struggle that you have with your ego. It is the internal struggle that you face when you're facing moral decisions, ethical decisions. That is the jihad of Iran. On the other hand, for Sunnis, jihad is considered maybe one of the six pillars of Islam. Your prayers you do your ablutions, you do every day, you do your, you feed the poor, you give your tax over to, for the keeping of the poor, you go on Hajj to your pilgrimage to Mecca. But they also include jihad as a possible pillar. You will not find anything like that in Iran. Other thing I would share is one reason why Shias are regarded as heretics by Sunnis is that the Shias don't really fully accept the Quran as the Quran is. Because of all the leaders of the 12 main leaders of Shia have been either poisoned or assassinated. And this is all the bloodline of Muhammad. That's what Sunnis have attempted to wipe out, the bloodline of Muhammad upon which Shias based their faith. And so therefore, if you look at all the leaders have been imprisoned, they've been poisoned, Ali was assassinated while he was doing prayers, all by Sunnis. And this is going back just a generation after the death of Muhammad. Therefore, when we think of Iran as supporting Hezbollah, or they're supporting certain other Shia terrorist groups, I think it's wise to think of it that they're not supporting them because of any geopolitical significance or any kind of sense of expansion. They're simply supporting their own, because this is a group, a religious group, that has been under huge persecution for over 1,000 years. And so it has nothing to do with expansion. It has to do with just allowing those groups to practice their faith. And if we look at Iran, the Jewish community, it's the second largest Jewish community in the Muslim world, is found in Iran. And they are given a seat. It is a designated seat that they have in the Iranian parliament. Same for Christians, same for Zoroastrians. It's actually an extremely tolerant religion, where the Jews in Iran would never want to leave there, because they would be treated terribly if they went to other Arab Muslim countries where there's a Sunni dominant population. So I don't know if that.
Okay, now we don't have a lot of time, but I'd like for you to answer some short questions.
Sure.
How do you see helping begin the process? It'll take years. Of bringing conflict out of that and putting peace in place in place like Syria or Iraq?
I see movements of this kind of a conflict. There are resolutions coming, but more in South Asia. Recently, the president of India, Modi, called all the Muslim Sufi teachers together to look at how Sufism could be and now Sufism is the mystical side of Islam, and it has a universalist kind of teaching, because it recognizes all the prophets, including Buddha and Krishna and Shiva and Abraham, Moses, Jesus, Mary. It looks at all of them as having been prophets, and so there is this sense of tolerance and love that exists in this mystical tradition of Islam. So India, the president has called upon the Sufis to come step forward and are actually looking at this as a model to bring about a resolution, a conflict resolution throughout the different sects and groups, the conflict. I personally see this as a wonderful model, because there is a deep and rich Sufi tradition throughout Egypt, Morocco. Syria has a very rich tradition, although ISIS is bombing and destroying all the Sufi shrines at this moment. Of course, in Saudi Arabia, though, the Sufis are considered heretics. If you claim yourself a Sufi, you could be beheaded for witchcraft. Which has occurred on a couple of occasions. So I think there's a movement where this more mystical model of Islam could be used as kind of a platform to reinterpret a lot of the Quranic teachings in a more allegorical way rather than a literalist way, that could bring about some kind of peace, love, and harmony.
There was a time back in 1969 when Henry Kissinger and Richard Nixon decided that they wanted to have a massive bombing campaign in Cambodia. In fact, it was later determined by the Finnish Government Commission of Inquiry that 600,000 Cambodian civilians, just normal peasants living in rural areas, were killed, with the largest bombing campaign up to that point, and it was all secret, against non-combatants. There were no enemies there. But what it did was, when they bombed them into oblivion, it allowed a fella living there who had a little ragtag group of Khmer Rouge, and his name was Pol Pot, P-O-L-P-O-T. And from the bombing and from creating terror in citizens, he was able to unite the citizens of Cambodia to create a 200,000 Khmer Rouge army. And then that in turn led to what was one of the greatest genocides. In numbers, it was some say 2.3 million, others say 1.6 million, whatever it is. It's clearly above 1,500,000 people died because of the Khmer Rouge and Pol Pot. And we, the United States, and our bombing campaign and our declaration that, you know, we didn't care about life of people over there, that happened then. Now imagine that that is happening now. ISIS didn't exist. The al-Nusra didn't exist. These radicalized groups did not exist until we created the foundation for them to exist. So when we bombed what was a very advanced healthcare system, educational system, it was a secular system in Iraq, and they represented no threat to us. Was he a tyrant? Yes, he was a tyrant. Was he a good person? He wasn't a good person. But he was smart enough to know that you better live a society, let your society be in coexistence. He didn't want internal conflict. Now, he was a Sunni. He had a Ba'athist party, Saddam Hussein, and they represented about 15 to 20% of the population. 65% of the population were Shia. Mm-hmm. And they were not given the same jobs, even though they had intermarried with the Sunnis. They learned to coexist, and it was a safe place to be. People didn't feel threatened by taking a journey before the invasion in 1991. And then our invasion led to 500,000 children dying from the sanctions that Bill and Hillary Clinton put into effect. And Madeleine Albright made no apology for on 60 Minutes. So now, out of that war zone, out of creating terror and poverty and sickness and death over the last almost 30 years, these small groups begin to arise, just like Pol Pot does. Wouldn't it make sense at some point to stop all of this bombardment, get out of these countries, and then have our world religious leaders come together with their religious leaders and those who espouse at least coexistence to create the world that they want? It's their country, it's their religions, and find ways of coexisting rather than thinking that, you know, okay, we're going to go in there and we're going to drone these people, we're going to put boots on the ground. That didn't work in Vietnam. It didn't work for the Russians in 9 years with all that death of a million Afghanistans. It didn't work for us for 12 years in Afghanistan. It didn't work for us in Iraq. It hasn't worked at all. And yet that's the only model I hear advocated in the United States and around the world now is boots on the ground, more attacks, more planes, mm-hmm. more armaments. Mm-hmm. And I see all you're going to do is create more splinter groups so that if you do stop ISIS in one place, it's going to reemerge in another group somewhere else. And one day you're going to have nothing but hundreds of splinter groups. And no one's going to get the idea that you don't create. If you're in an emergency room and you've got a patient who's just been in a major car wreck, you don't go in with a sledgehammer, start beating him on the legs, thinking somehow that's going to inspire healing. Your thoughts on this? Yeah.
Well, I would also just add, we put sanctions on the wrong countries, and I think it's outrageous that Saudi Arabia, which is the birthplace, one could say, for what has emerged and morphed into Islamic terrorism, is given such utter free rein. You know, there is no Muslim country, Arab, Sunni, whatever, who wants to model and take on the Saudi Arabian form of government. you know, even moderates, even right-wingers in Egypt would never want to have a Saudi form of government, and they would not dream of imposing that kind of a rule. And yet here is Saudi Arabia, which is one of our, you know, remains one of our greatest allies. And even, you know, and I pose Bernie Sanders on this issue, where he suggests, well, Saudi Arabia should be taking a greater role in trying to bring about reconciliation in the Middle East. And this is insane. This is a real insane posturing.
You realize that Bernie Sanders was living his lifestyle, which he has every right, and I support him living his lifestyle in the United States. Mm-hmm. He would be beheaded in Saudi Arabia.
Sure. We all would be.
Yeah.
All of us.
All the progressives would be.
We certainly would.
I mean,
yeah.
How in the world can we not understand that Saudi Arabia is the problem?
It is. And I think, I mean, this is now, we could pose sanctions, but ultimately, and I think this is coming. We've had a couple guests on. Actually, we should really bring him back, that one British guy. But I think there's going to be an internal collapse occurring in Saudi Arabia now. The oil prices have backfired on them. There's just a lot. They're taking loans now from the World Bank and the IMF. Saudi Arabia never had to do that before.
But they still have 5 years to draw down their $900 billion. Remember, everywhere else in the world where the price of oil to refine it, depending mm-hmm. upon whether it's very light crude, which they have the most pure yeah. form of oil, or heavy crude, could be around $63 a barrel, their cost is $6 a barrel. So they can let everyone else in the world go broke trying to manufacture oil. They will still be the final person standing. That's not their problem. Their problem is they've gone on this tremendous spending binge mm-hmm. of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars collectively on defense, but also building up Mecca with the largest hotel in the world. They have massive debt, and it's
25% unemployment among their citizens.
And so sooner or later, their entire economic model will collapse mm-hmm. if they don't want to change. And then their own citizens will eat them alive. I mean, they have mm-hmm. they have so radicalized Wahhabism there that they're intolerant. And they did more beheadings, more lashes, mm-hmm. more amputations, more stoning to death than ISIS in the last year.
Yeah,
why don't?
Sure.
And yet they're now heading the human rights panel at the UN, and that's only because the United Nations put them in that person. We'll deal with that on an upcoming
right,
program.
Right, we'll have to touch that one. Yeah.
Well, I appreciate you coming on, Richard, and giving us some insight that we have demonized some of the wrong groups in the world. I'm Gary Nall. More to come. Thank you all for sharing this hour with us. I appreciate it. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day. Everybody claims.